quite appropriate, that line in the song says, "Far beyond the starry sky," and here we have a nice starry sky on the slide. So I love looking at pictures like that. It's amazing that the one who spoke that into existence from nothing is the one we remembered at this table, who humbled himself and came and lived as a man and lived a perfect life and died a cruel, shameful death because of my sin. There's a popular expression, "Are you serious? Are you serious?" I think we've all heard that expression. According to the Urban Dictionary, it is a question asked in disbelief with an extremely sarcastic tone, questioning someone's actions or statement. It is a way to point out someone's stupidity in the form of a question. It is total disbelief or disappointment in how someone did or said something. Well, I'm going to use that expression as the basis for our lesson, but I'm not trying to be sarcastic. I'm not trying to say anyone here is stupid or disappointment, but I'm doing it to encourage us to examine ourselves about some very, very important things. Self-examination is something that every Christian should be engaging in. In the long ago, the prophet said, "Now therefore, thus says the Lord of hosts, consider your ways." David said in Psalm 26, "Examine me, O Lord, and prove me, try my mind and my heart." It's only through brutal self-examination that we can ensure that we're on the right path to heaven. Again, David said, "I thought about my ways." What did you do, David, when you thought about your ways? I turned my feet to your testimonies. I made haste and did not delay to keep your commandments. Jeremiah, in a book that we very rarely quote from, said, "Let us search out and examine our ways and turn back to the Lord." You see, anyone can preach to us until they're blue in the face, but I'm the only one that can give an honest analysis of my relationship to the Lord, and the same is true for all of us. That's why Paul said in 2 Corinthians 13 and verse 5, to examine yourselves as to whether you're in the faith. Well, I know that the world does not take salvation seriously. They dismiss it as nonsense. Even more distressing is that some Christians, by the way they act, the things they do or don't do, don't take salvation as seriously as we ought to be doing that. So I'm ahead of myself on the slides, I apologize. I want to apply this lesson to the concept of salvation. Years ago, I heard Leon Odom, a gospel preacher, say in a lesson that Baptists preach the error of once saved, always saved, but some members of the Lord's church live as if it were true. So file that one away and think about it. So why do some not take their salvation as seriously as they should? I think one big thing is it's so easy to be distracted just by the everyday life. We get so consumed in just living our lives that it's easy to forget what's truly important. We lose our focus. I know that's one thing I pray about. I try to do so every time I pray, to ask the Lord to help me not lose my focus, because it's so easy to do that. And when we lose our focus, we get our priorities out of whack. "For what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul?" Jesus said. I doubt there's in this audience that would disagree with that statement. But sometimes our lives, we don't live them as being consistent with that statement. That's why we should be examining ourselves. We need to remember that life is short, death is certain, judgment is sure and final, eternities forever, and preparation is necessary. Salvation is not something that we can put on the back burner, so to speak. Something that, well, when I have time, I'll get around to that. That's what Felix said, didn't he? When I have a more convenient season, I'll do that. It can't be that way, because now it is high time to awake out of sleep, Paul quotes. For our salvation is nearer than when we first believed. Think about that. Every minute I live, every minute you live, we're 1 minute closer to judgment. That's just an absolute truth. The night is far spent, the day is at hand. We don't know how many days we have left. We could die in a car accident. Some of us men especially, we could drop dead suddenly of a heart attack. I remember my mother worked at this place, and she was always talking about Chris, this guy that she worked with. And Chris was a great guy. Well, one day Chris went home and sat down in his easy chair and never woke up again, just died. Or we could get that bad diagnosis that we have terminal cancer or whatever it might be. So we need to be ready. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. Not tomorrow, not next week or next month. It's certainly true that we can help one another along the road, and we need to do that for one. But we have to take ownership of our own salvation. Paul said, work out your own salvation in fear and trembling. I can help you, you can help me, but in the final analysis, I'm responsible for me. So, in the interest of self-examination, are you serious? Are you serious when it comes to salvation? So that's going to be the title of our lesson. First of all, are you serious about your own salvation? Again, we can help one another along the way and should. Let us consider one another to stir up one another to love and good works. Paul says that we do this by not forsaking the assembling of ourselves together, but we're to what? Exhort one another, and so much the more, or especially because you see the day approaching. Now, the day approaching, I think, in that context was the destruction of Jerusalem, but the day of judgment, again, is approaching. It's another day closer every day. It's certainly true we can't provide the basis of our own salvation. Only God does that through the perfect sacrifice of Christ. But the buck stops at my desk when it comes to my salvation. Work out your salvation with fear and trembling. God expects something out of us. We're saved by grace. It's unmerited favor, but it's through faith, Paul says in Ephesians 2 and verse 8. Jesus is the author of eternal salvation unto all those that obey him. So we have to have this saving faith, a working faith. So we need to be this is going to be simple stuff that we all know. We need to be applying ourselves day to day to be growing in the faith. We need to be studying and reading our Bible, not just in preparation for the Bible class, but just for our own benefit. We need to be praying. How many times a day do you pray? Or maybe a better is, how many times a week or a month do you pray? We need to be praying without ceasing. We need to be here at services. You're going to hear a lot about that in this sermon, and I hope that we have the right attitude towards our attendance. It's not like God is calling the roll and checking a list and, well, you've got more attendances than the next fellow, that sort of thing. It's all about growing in the faith. It's all about our love for the Lord and our love for one another. So we need to be totally devoted. For whosoever desires to save his life, Jesus said, will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. That certainly described Paul. He It was no longer he that lived, he said, but it's Christ that lives in him. And we all need to look in that mirror and make sure that could be said of us. In 2 Corinthians 7 and verse 1, Paul says, therefore, he's making a conclusion. He's making a conclusion based on that if we live as we should be living, that we are God's people, that being the case, therefore, having these promises that God will never forsake us and so forth, let us cleanse ourselves from all filthiness of the flesh and spirit. Now notice this, and remember this phrase, perfecting holiness in the fear of the Lord. I need to examine myself. Am I doing that today? Am I striving to perfect holiness in the fear of the Lord? So we all need to ask ourselves, what am I doing in regards to working out my own salvation? Again, Matthew 16, 26, for what shall it profit a man if he gains the whole world and loses his own soul? We're all going to appear before that judgment of Christ. And what is our life? It's but a vapor. So, in the interest of self-examination, and I'm talking to myself as I talk to you, do you think about these things? Do they concern you? Do you plan on being stronger in the faith next year than you are right now? And if so, what are you doing about it? And if you're not, why aren't you thinking about that? Where do these things fall in my priority list of life? Anyone not found in the book of life was cast into the lake of fire. I've been having problem with my hip. The doctor says it's bursitis, and he gave me a cortisone shot on Thursday. Didn't do any good. But it did take an x-ray and said that the joint looks pretty good, so that's a positive thing. But for some reason, it hurts me the most when I'm sitting and laying. And I think every day this past week, it's awakened me before my scheduled awakening time. And I was laying there one morning, it was really bothering me, and I thought about that verse, and I thought, you know, hell's going to be worse than this hip pain. I can't imagine dealing with this pain for another hour, much less for eternity or worse. But also there's the positive things. God will wipe away our tears. He's going to rid us of the pain. I'm ready for that, for sure. But I'm not going to get there by accident, and none of us will. He's going to transform our lowly body that it be conformed to his glorious body. To me, even if there were no such thing as eternal punishment, to me that would be worth making all the sacrifices that the Lord asks us to make in this life, just to have that wonderful blessing awaiting us. So if you're a Christian and you're not perfecting holiness in the fear of the Lord, when are you going to get around to doing that? Procrastination is deadly. Remember Jesus' parable about the 10 virgins. What was the punchline? What was the whole point? Is in verse 13, watch therefore, for you know neither the day nor the hour in which the Son of Man is coming. We have to be ready. There are no do-overs when it comes to this. When we draw our final breath, it's too late. Our eternal fate is sealed. So, are you serious about your own salvation? Next, are you serious about your family's salvation? There's a quote, and this is just part of the quote, that no man is an island. We all have what I call a sphere of influence. Our family, our friends, our co-workers, our neighbors, and so forth, we have this sphere of influence. And the most important part of that sphere of influence is our family. They're the ones nearest and dearest to us, the ones most important to us. I sometimes get frustrated that it's hard so hard to find someone to listen to the gospel message, much less obey it, then every time I get frustrated with that, I remember Noah. He went through that for 120 years. I've not lived that long. It's only about half that length, and I know I won't make it to 120. But at least Noah saved his family. And if that's the case with me, I'm going to feel like a success. In that regard, I want to especially speak to parents, especially fathers. I also want to speak to the young people, because someday you're going to be grown and married and have your own children. And you need to be thinking about these things as well. The psalmist said that our children are a heritage from the Lord. They're a gift. And as mothers and fathers, we have an obligation to teach them, to train them in the nurture and the admonition of the Lord, as Paul said in Ephesians 6 and verse 4. The ladies have an obligation too, to love their husbands and love their children. And the most important thing in that regard is their spiritual condition. There's a lot of important things our children need to learn. They need to learn the value of a dollar. They need to learn that it's a good thing to do good in school. It's good that we can instill in them a strong work ethic and many things, but there is nothing more important than their salvation. I want to suggest five things that it's really important for us to teach our children. First and foremost, teach them to love and obey God. You shall love the Lord your God with all your heart, with all your soul, and with all your mind. That includes loving them. Timothy was fortunate that he had a spiritually minded grandmother and mother. Evidently, his father wasn't that way. But he, from a childhood, knew the Holy Scriptures. So we need to be teaching our children the truth and the value of the truth, and to be obedient to the truth. David said in Psalm 119, verse 34, "Give me understanding, and I shall keep your law. Indeed, I shall observe it with my whole heart. Make me walk in the path of your commandments, for I delight in it." Instilling these things in our children should be first and foremost on our minds each and every day. We should also be teaching them that preparation is necessary in order to get to heaven. Seek ye first the kingdom of God. In that regard, we need to teach them sometimes it's going to be a lonely trip, because not many people obey the gospel. They might even have to put up with resistance from their own family members. So we need to teach them to be strong and of good courage, as Joshua 1 and verse 9 says. Need to teach them to overcome the distractions of the world. The latest video game, participation in sports, going to the movies, whatever it might be. Not that those things in and of themselves are wrong, but God and His Word come first in our lives. We need to teach them about the consequences of sin. We need to teach them that hell is real, and those who die in sin will go there. And in fact, the vast, vast majority of people are headed there. Those that obey not the gospel and know not God, God is going to take eternal fiery vengeance upon those folks. That's just the way it is. Furthermore, we need to them, as the wise man said, not to forget the law, but let your heart keep my commandments. For length of days and long life and peace they will add to you. A life of sin is a life of shame, disgrace, and regret. Been there and done that. Sin offers only momentary pleasure, but delivers eternal death. Very importantly, we need to teach them that sin shatters our hearts when we sin. And it robs us when we sin of our peace of mind, but it does the same thing to our families. or loved ones. It can destroy a marriage. It devastates and alienates families. We see that just all over the place. And ultimately, it results in people being lost. We don't want that for ourselves, and we certainly don't want that for our loved ones. We need to teach them to have courage in the face of adversity. We're all going to suffer adversity in this life. Man who is born of woman, few days and full of trouble. But just because we face adversity doesn't mean that God does not love us. He chastens those who he loves, as we studied last Sunday night. Furthermore, whatever suffering we might go through in this life is but a light affliction when we compare it to the reward. So, that being the case, we need to teach them not to lose heart, because this light affliction is but for a moment. It works for us a far more exceeding and eternal weight of glory. In this regard, we need to teach them that we can grow stronger through suffering. It seems like a paradox, but it's true. Paul understood that when he dealt with this thorn in the flesh. So, there's so many things. I have a list of about 10 things here we can learn through suffering, and I don't want to dwell on them, but we learn obedience, we learn steadfastness, we learn how to depend on God when we use it in the right way. We learn the power of prayer. We are reminded of how frail of creatures we are, how much we desperately need God. It strengthens our faith. It reminds us that God will never leave us. And it, very importantly, teaches us to be sympathetic to other people. Fifth, and there's probably a lot more that we could talk about, we need to teach our children that faith and service to God is the most important thing in life. That really pretty much sums it up, doesn't it? How do we do that? Well, we can read the Bible with them and so forth. That's important. But the primary way we do that is how we live our lives. If God is not the most important thing in my life, why in the world would I expect my child to make it the most important thing in their life? Blessed are those who hunger and thirst for righteousness. That is the example that we need to be setting. They need to see, Dawn needs, for example, needs to see Sherry and I living the Christian life every day of the week, not just on Sunday. Doesn't mean that we're going to be perfect, doesn't mean that we're going to have mistakes, but that has to dominate our lives. It's very important that our children see that we as husbands and wives love one another and love them. And that doesn't preclude discipline, because discipline is a form of love. They need to see that spiritual development is our top priority for us and our family. And I keep coming back to this, but in that regard, attendance is important. We can't allow little things to keep us away from services. Well, I got a hangnail tonight, so I'm not going to come. Or my favorite TV show is on. Or, you know, that big game is on, and I want to see it. Or relatives or friends dropped in. So, you know, we have to entertain them. They need to see that how important it is to us. If they don't see that in us, then it's not going to be important to them. I recognize that we can do everything as right as we possibly can as human beings in raising our children, and our children can still be lost, because in the end, they're free moral agents and they make their own decision in that regard. But we have to give them a fighting chance by making it important in our lives. One of the most important things I did, I think, in my relationship with Ryan was two things. When I was going to graduate school, I had been working a job that had, was 7 days a week, 80 hours or more, and finally I quit that job. There were a lot of reasons I quit, but one of the reasons I quit was because it was affecting my family negatively. When I quit that job, I didn't have any job to go to, but I quit it anyway, and it ended up being the right decision. Another thing I did was, even though I was going to grad school, and I didn't do this all the time I went because I wasn't able to, but for a good portion of it, Sherry had to work to help support the family. So Ryan was on his own after school, and that wasn't good. We had some good babysitters, but then when I was able to do so, I would go to work at 5 o'clock in the morning and then get off and come home and pick him up from school and spend time with them. It wasn't easy. Another thing I did was there were jobs that I didn't seek when I graduated because I knew it was going to take away from my family. So again, the most important thing that we can give our families, not measured by dollars. Our children don't need things nearly as much as they need us, and especially that they need God. I think the greatest failure that I could ever suffer in life would be to lose my spouse or my children to the world, especially if it was my fault, if there was something I did or something I neglected to do. So I hope that you'll think about that, because again, there are no do-overs. Well, are we serious about our brethren's salvation? And that starts with ourselves, and it starts at home. We have responsibilities to our brethren, whether they're members of this church or other places. And again, I have this long list. I have it here on the screen. I'm not going to go through those. We know those things. So I believe we can sum it up in this way. When it comes to my brethren's salvation, I need to be totally devoted to the Lord, to the truth, to loving them, and totally devoted to the Lord's church. And again, a huge component of being successful at assisting our brethren when it comes to their salvation is being here when we have services. Again, God isn't up there with this checklist taking roll like at grammar school. But our being here, I believe, is a barometer of our love for the Lord and our love for one another. Certainly there are reasons that we can't be here every service, but we need to do all we can to remove whatever might be hindering us. If it's something is hindering you that we can help other members of the congregation, don't hesitate to ask, because we'll help. We need to be serious about our community salvation, and that starts with our own salvation, the salvation of our family, and the salvation of our brethren. Very importantly, we can't make a dent in the community unless we build and maintain a strong congregation. First and foremost, we have to stand for the truth. If there's no truth, then we might as well close the doors. We need to, again, have this strong mutual love for one another. Christians, when it comes to love, should be so obvious, different than any other sector of our society that people really notice. In John 17 and verse 34, a new commandment, Jesus said, I give to you that you love one another. How? As I have loved you. That's a pretty tall order. That you also love one another. Now notice verse 35. By this all will know that you are my disciples if you have love for one another. So we stand for the truth. We love one another. We seek and maintain true biblical unity, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit. How? In the bond of peace. There's the the idea of love again. We look out not only for our own interests, but the interests of others, as Paul said in Philippians chapter 2. Another thing that we need to have a strong congregation is every member contributing what they can contribute to the overall effort. In Ephesians 4, verse 16, the whole body joined and knit together by what every joint, every person supplies, according to the effective working by which every part does its share. We each have a share. Causes the growth of the body for the edifying of itself in love. I'm going to come back to attendance again. How can we grow as we should if we're not here? How can we consider one another to stir up love and good works if we're not consistently here? Every member needs to actively strive to share the gospel with other people, their sphere of influence, if you will. When the disciples were scattered in Jerusalem, they went everywhere preaching the word. Not just evangelists, but every Christian did that. We need to seek to have a congregation that is so strong, that's so full of love for the Lord and love for the one another, that people look at that and say, that's what I'm looking for, what I want to be like. There's an old saying that says that a chain is only strong as its weakest link. And the same thing is true of every congregation. Then our final point is that, are you serious about the world's salvation? Again, I believe that starts with our own salvation, our family salvation, the brethren's salvation, and our community. We need to take the gospel into all the world. That's a daunting task. We need to adopt God's desire. God's desire is that all men come to a knowledge of the truth and are saved. 1 Timothy 2 and verse 4. I would encourage you to include that in your prayers. That is your desire as it is God's. Turn over to 1 Timothy chapter 2, where that is from. I quote that verse a lot. I use it in my prayers. And then it dawned on me when I was preparing for the lesson, it's interesting the context in which that verse appears. Begins in verse 1 of that chapter. Therefore, I exhort, first of all, that supplication, prayers, intercessions, and giving of thanks be made for all men. We need to pray for everybody, for kings and for all who are in authority, that we may lead a quiet and peaceable life in all godliness and reverence. For this is good and acceptable in the sight of God our Savior. Now, this is where the verse comes in, who desires all men to be saved and to come to the knowledge of the truth. It's in the context of praying and praying for everyone. We also need to be willing to support the preaching of the gospel beyond this congregation, beyond this community. We can do that many ways. Prayer is important. We need to pray for the Lord's work wherever it might be. We need to give encouragement when we can. If you want to send an email to a gospel preacher in Zimbabwe or Philippines or India, I know a lot of folks, and I'll gladly give you their email addresses. Or if you want to do it, I get this report every month from a preacher in New York City. I get one from one in Chile. And I always answer those emails, trying to encourage them. And I would encourage you to do the same thing. So if you need an email address, I'll be glad to share that with you. And then we need to financially support it. We need to do that as a congregation and do that personally. As a congregation, we don't have the wherewithal to do that right now. But hopefully, at some point in the future, we will. But you can also do that personally. It's amazing what $50 here and there will do. I just know preacher after preacher that has no support. I remember meeting this preacher in the Philippines when I was over there in 2010. And I don't know whether he went to the store and bought this or his wife made it or something, but he sold breadsticks, these little breadsticks on the street corner to earn enough money to feed his family and so he could preach. $50 once in a while or once a month or whatever to a person like that would be, you wouldn't believe how much it would be appreciated. Well, that's our lesson for this morning. Not a long lesson, but as we bring it to a close, we need to all ask ourselves how serious we are about salvation. Ourselves, our family, our brethren, our community, and the world. There's a legal term or phrase that says time is of the essence. It's in contract law. It means usually when it's put in a contract that there's a deadline involved with that. For example, you're going to build a building. Time is of the essence. And then there would be provisions in the contract that establish a deadline and establish the consequences of not meeting the deadline, or possibly positive consequences by meeting the contract ahead of time. Well, when it comes to salvation, time is of the essence. Behold, now is the accepted time. Behold, now is the day of salvation. As Zach read for us, how shall we escape if we neglect so great a salvation? We won't. So, the time is now. Now is the day of salvation. If you're here and you need to obey the gospel, you need the prayers of the congregation, now is the time as we stand and sing.